Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 81 of Season 4 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we take a hilarious and poignant journey through the 1989 Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan rom-com When Harry Met Sally, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is actually a very special group of guests because finally we have a married couple on together. So I'd like to welcome Roger and Marcy Wister of the Roadhouse Minute, of 12 Days of White Christmas, and also of Speed Minute, or at least Roger's from the Speed Minute. Welcome to the show, guys.
Hi,
Hi,
thanks
Rob.
for having us.
Yeah, I'm really excited you had us on. I was just telling you before we started recording, I'm happy that you had us on to talk about these minutes because these are like the relationship fighting minutes. I feel like it's appropriate you have a married couple on to talk about this. Maybe we'll dissect them.
I agree with you. I just hope you guys don't start fighting because of
Oh,
that. Oh,
no.
We'll have to try and keep away from that. Them's fighting words, but we're gonna keep as far away from those.
We've learned how to do that constructively. It only takes lots of therapy.
Okay, that's fine. And Harry and Sally just aren't there yet. So, it'll take them a few more years till they reach that point where they're able to have a normal conversation in public like this. But we'll get there. We'll get there. So minute 81 begins with Harry making a slightly rude gesture and ends with Sally acting furiously. So we ended things on Friday with Harry coming over to Sally at Jess and Marie's wedding and starting to, ask her about her life, what's going on. They apparently for 3 weeks haven't really had much to talk about because of this little rift that they have that we talked about a few weeks ago. And at this point, Harry says to Sally, it's been 3 weeks. You should already get over it. And he says, it's like with dogs, how 7 years for a dog is or 1 year for a dog is 7 years for humans or something like that, that whole thing. And Sally just turns to him, and at the beginning of this minute, he gives like a very flashy smile, indicating that he is referring to her because and it's not really very nice the way that he does it. It's funny because Billy Crystal is hilarious with he knows how to make the right facial expressions here. There's no question about that. He gives like a little smile and puts his hands out as if to say, we're talking about you. And then Sally says to him, is one of us supposed to be a dog in this scenario? And he goes, yes. Who is the dog? You are. I am. I am the dog. I am the dog. I don't see that, Harry. If anybody is the dog, you are the dog. You want me to act like what happened didn't mean anything? And then, I mean, basically, this is just a continuation of the conversation on Friday, but it really fits in well because, it starts off cordially. On Friday, what we talked about was a more cordial discussion between the two of them, even though she doesn't really want to have anything to do with him, and he is trying to get his friend back, that type of thing. But he basically crosses the line with his dog comment and then his gesture at the beginning of this minute. Do you guys both agree with that?
It's an interesting question. So Marcy, when I was rewatching these minutes for our appearance this week, I was trying to go back and forth between sort of who I thought was in the right or in the wrong here. And I would say, I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I'm going to say, on the whole, I think Harry is in the right. But like, man, this is not a good way to try to communicate this to someone who you think is your best friend.
You think he's in the
Correct.
right because he's been trying to call her and make amends this whole time, and she's been kind of blowing him off and ignoring him?
I think in general, the conversation that they start to have today and finish having tomorrow, I feel like it's like she's blaming him for what happened between the two of them, and also for like how big a deal she's making it.
Do
But
you
there's
think that she's upset because, well, like she's upset because he left and it is his pattern to leave women. And so she got that done to her, and she was probably expecting something different to happen after they had sex with each other. Like, she looked super happy after it happened, and he looked terrified. And now, like, he's followed the same pattern that he does with every other woman that she's known about. And, you know, she stuck being just another woman to him.
Well, I sort of wanted to interject here, because I agree on the one hand with what you're saying there, Marcy, but on the other hand, you know, he did stay till the morning. You know, the stories that we heard from him beforehand was that he would get up in the middle of the night to go, give an excuse that he needs to go to the gym or needs to go clean his andirons or something like that. So, you know, he was terrified, but I think he was terrified because, you know, he was concerned about the fact that he's now, their friendship is ruined.
Well,
I think they both
are such great actors that, like, you can tell when they're comfortable with each other, and you can tell them when they're completely not comfortable. And so even though he stayed till the morning, he was so uncomfortable throughout that whole thing. And
No, I agree with you on that.
I don't think it's going to register to her like, oh, he stayed an extra few hours, but still he blew her off the same way that he would have with somebody else. They're fantastic. Like, he comes, you know, up to her in this moment, and they're looking at each other across the wedding hall as their friends are getting married. And she's just like super jittery and uncomfortable and just crawling out of her skin to see this guy. And so you just see the anxiety about the situation kind of bubbling over in her.
I guess my point is, it seems like Harry is attempting to at least try to dissect and analyze what has happened between the two of them. I don't feel like Sally's doing a good job of processing at all. I don't think that she was behaving rationally that night when they were together or afterwards. Like, if she thought that somehow that meant that they were now about to, like, couple up, I think that that was, like, wildly off base. And, like, I guess his point is, like, look, this happened 3 weeks ago. Why can't we just talk about it? And she, you know, you hear this, I don't know if this is in today's minute or tomorrow's minute, but, you know, this is where, like, he says something like, you know, she says something like, well, you're behaving like this doesn't mean anything. And he says, well, I'm not saying that. I just don't see why it has to mean everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think that.
Correct. That's actually the next line of what we were about to say.
I don't see why this sex between them should be treated in the same way as any encounter they would have with anybody that theoretically they were romantically pursuing.
No, but on the other hand, you know, they both came to their dinner date, you know, the night after having sex, and they both felt, I mean, they tell us beforehand, you know, with the voiceovers, that neither one of them both of them are both hoping that the other one is going to say that they, you know, don't think that this was think this was a mistake.
Yeah,
that's true. So that's true. That's a fair point.
So again, it's been 3 weeks. They both realized they made a mistake, you know, and they both admitted to the fact that they made the mistake.
But
and they somehow seemed relieved about it. But on the other hand, Sally still wants more, and Harry just wants the friendship back.
I would say as a man.
Do you think he just wants the friendship back, though? Like, that man from the get-go has wanted her in a different way than that.
No,
really?
But for him, it was always from the get-go, he just wanted a one-night stand with her. He didn't want her to be the one. I think that's what scares him. You know, what scares him is that she's the one.
I don't think that at this point in their friendship, he is romantically pursuing her.
No, he was. I think he was very comfortable with the fact. I mean, we've already discussed the fact that it's. They became friends in the bookstore sometime, let's say, late September, early October. And this is already more than a year later, because we established last week that this wedding is somewhere between Thanksgiving and Christmas. Well, we know it's not Christmas yet, so it's somewhere around Thanksgiving time. Okay, so it's been over a year that the two of them have been best friends. And at some point, you know, 3 weeks before the wedding, so it could be that it was exactly a year, that they knew each other, you know, that's when she had her breakdown because of Joe, and then they had sex, and that was the end of their friendship. He was very comfortable with their friendship. You know, Jess was so jealous of their friendship when he was telling Jess about, you know, all the things that he's able to say to Sally and get her feedback.
Right.
You know, the type of friendship that, you know, that neither one of them realizes that's the type of friendship that one wants in a marriage.
So, yeah, I mean, so getting back to what I was saying originally, like, I think in general, Harry is probably in the right in this conversation, but you shouldn't begin this conversation like this is a very ill-timed joke on his part. I'm not sure that there's any good time for this particular joke with a woman, but definitely not right now.
Yeah, okay. I agree with you on that. I mean, I think that to try and clarify what you're saying is that Harry has the right intentions. He's just not expressing them properly.
As a man who's done that very frequently, I can attest. I feel kinship with him in this minute.
You've called someone a dog like that?
No, not specifically. Let's just say that sometimes our intentions are good. The road to hell is paved with good intentions. Isn't that what they say?
Of course. Yes. That is definitely true. So the conversation continues and, you know, Sally says, you want to act like what happened didn't mean anything. And then Harry says, I'm not saying it didn't mean anything. I am saying, why does it have to mean everything? Because it does. And you should know that better than anybody, because the minute that it happened, you walked right out the door. I didn't walk out. No, sprinted is more like it. We both agreed it was a mistake. The worst mistake I ever made. Now, one of the things I love about this conversation, and I've talked about this many times, you know, this is pre-West Wing, but throughout this movie, there are so many conversations that happen as people are on the go. And even this argument works that way.
Yeah, it's nice. It's dynamic like that.
You know, there's a point in the middle of the conversation where Sally turns to him and, you know, basically motions with him with her finger that they should be moving somewhere else a little more private.
I was glad you brought that up because you know, I think that's my favorite part of this minute is when she turns back and makes this like very
come hither motion with her finger.
I feel like it's something that like a 10-year-old would try to it seems like a very juvenile gesture, like come here.
It's a juvenile gesture, but it makes sense.
Yeah, no, but I
for her to say fun- to, for her to do that
it's here. Funny the way that Meg Ryan does it is my point.
Yes, I agree. And then as she's continuing, she then once again takes him even further away from the crowd, and they end up going into the kitchen in order to have more privacy, which is really funny because you know, you have all the chefs and the waiters and cooks and everyone in there listening in on their conversation. So that sort of doesn't give them as much privacy as one would expect.
It's like at the beginning of the movie where they're walking into the very first diner talking about like how she hasn't actually had good sex with somebody. And then she's in the middle of the diner screaming, I've had good sex. Sheldon.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean,
Sheldon the Wonder Slum.
There's two.
And then there's quiet in that in that cafe. It's like quiet as she says that, yeah. So everyone hears that. But that's movie. That's movie magic from that perspective. I doubt that would really happen in real life when someone would be in the middle of a cafe and it just happens to be that there's dead silence when you make a comment like that. You know, that was just for the laugh. But
nobody
it
pays attention to them in the kitchen. Marcy, did you notice?
No, not at all.
Marcy, did you notice that Sally is holding a flower in this minute, but she decides to chuck it away on their way to the kitchen?
It is not a flower.
That's
Roger.
Not a flower.
It's a
what
pea
is it?
With shrimp. It's a
that's the
shrimp.
Pea with shrimp.
Oh, you're right. Was... Thank you. You're right.
And she just throws
that's
it.
That's the pea pod with shrimp.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, I noticed that she chucked it. She chucked it on the way to the kitchen.
Yeah.
Well, because she doesn't want people in the kitchen to see that she's. You know, not eating the hors d'oeuvres that they've given her.
Oh, I think she's just pissed.
Yeah, no, it's,
no, of course.
It's, now it's
no, of course.
Business.
Exactly. And then Harry says, what do you want from me? I don't want anything from you. Fine. But let's get one thing straight. I did not go over there that night to make love to you. That is not why I went there. But you looked up at me with those big weepy eyes. Don't go home tonight, Harry. Hold me a little longer, Harry. What was I supposed to do? What are you saying? You took pity on me? No, I was. And that's basically how the minute will end.
The minute.
Yeah, but which is a great spot for the ending of that minute, for sure.
I guess my point, going back to what I was saying earlier, is like, I feel like a lot of the stuff that Sally says in this minute is not like, I don't know, it just doesn't seem like a constructive adult thing to say. Like she's like, you know, well, because it does. Like what kind of an answer is that to that question? Or like, I don't want anything from you, Harry. Like she seems like she's still processing. Like she hasn't figured out how she wants to handle this whole situation.
Well, she's,
okay, Marcy, how do you see that?
I feel like she's,
because I want to hear the female perspective on this one.
She's being very reasonable here. Like, she's just had a keystone relationship in her life shift and not had a lot of discussion about it. And I think, although he's trying to reach out, you're right, Roger, she's still processing like what that shift meant. Like, the two of them having sex with each other seemed like a really good thing for her. And then, but it's also coming at a time where they didn't talk about it and she was emotional. And so I think, you know, he's maybe able to look at it from a different perspective because he's not coming at it so emotionally about this ex getting married. But I think even though she's saying things that don't make any sense, it's all kind of in that wheelhouse of still trying to process what's going on and what it all means for her and how she's going to move forward and what he wants. And if she just keeps hearing like what he wants is that he wants the friendship back, that doesn't jive with like him actually having sex with her and changing the nature of their relationship.
Right. But I think also part of it, and they don't really mention this, but I think also the idea that, you know, Marie is her best friend is going through a better relationship than she is right now. You know, yeah. That could also have an effect on her, the way that she's been reacting to this whole thing. I mean, first of all, you know, as soon as the morning after, you know, she calls Marie, she wants to get Marie's advice on things and, you know, or at least get her to agree with the fact that, you know, that this wasn't the best idea. And then afterwards, you know, we had the scene where she was with Marie while Marie was trying on wedding dresses. And Sally is just sitting there eating, you know, M&Ms, which could somewhat be, you know, a sign of depression. You know, that she's sitting there eating chocolate while her friend is trying on these dresses and doesn't sound as supportive as one would think that a best friend should be. You know, so I have a feeling that part of this whole thing of why maybe she isn't able to really take in this whole thing of what happened with Harry is because she's also dealing with the fact that her best friend is in an amazing relationship and is, you know, in the process of about to, you know, walk down the aisle. And now she's there and she doesn't feel that comfortable at the wedding also.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's part of it.
Rob, when would be a good time? Maybe you've talked about this with your previous weeks, but on Roadhouse Minute, we deputized Marcy as our fashion consultant. Have you already talked about Sally's either A, wedding dress, or B, hair?
No. We've talked about it. No. You mean the dress she's wearing at this wedding?
So not wedding dress. That we haven't discussed. Her maid of honor dress and her hair.
Right. No, we haven't talked about the maid of honor dress. Her hair we've mentioned, but I'm assuming that Marcy will probably have better insight. So,
oh my God.
The floor is yours, Marcy.
Well, I don't want to put Marcy on the spot.
A mention of the hair.
This is peak bad hair for Sally. What do you think, Marcy?
Well, what did you all notice about her hair? Like, because I have noticed a lot about her hair throughout the whole movie. Did you all notice anything?
Well, it was always the style of the era.
Yeah, but she's had a lot of different hairstyles. And at this wedding is when her hair is peak curliness and permiest and like voluminous. Like, this is the most poodle hair she ever has on her head in the movie.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I'm gonna disagree with you on that. I think on the night when she had Harry come over, that's when her hair was even curlier than it is here.
Yeah, but I'm gonna give her a pass on that because she was clearly like in her feelings then. Like this is the way she wanted her hair to be.
Right, correct. Okay.
Yeah, she's got crazy hair throughout this whole movie, which is, you know, right. You're right. It's like based on the era, but you know, she starts out with like,
she had the Farrah Fawcett
hair, right?
Look back in the '70s, yep. And then you know she had the straight, I guess, airline stewardess type of hair in 1982, and then now it's more flowing, curly-ish hair.
I think
Yeah, that's what we've been dealing with for the last year.
There's only one part of this movie where I would say I really like her hair, and it's the part where they're like walking through the park and she's wearing that little beret-like hat, and it's just sort of, it's got a little bit of curl to it, but it's just straighter. It's kind of the way she looks at the very end of
Well,
the
no, you
movie.
can't see her whole head because she's wearing the hat.
No, but
But
her hair looks the same too at the end of the movie when they're doing their
yeah.
little stand-up scene. You don't like that?
That is the worst hair in the whole movie.
Wow, okay, fair.
Yeah,
It's like,
and Harry doesn't look that good there either.
it's
The two of them look
terrible.
really bad.
All
Like,
right.
at least in this part, she has like formed curls. In that part, it looks like she's gone through a wind tunnel and used like way too much Aquanet and then brushed it out. It is a horror show.
Well, based on our experience on Roadhouse, Marcy, I'm used to have a lot of Aquanet.
Yeah. I
What?
liked when
Well,
she
that was
used the
also 80s.
Aquanet
Come
at the
on, what do
beginning
you?
of the
That was.
movie.
What do you, Marcy? What do you think of this dress?
It's not the best. It definitely has like the long, the length of it makes it look kind of terrible when she has to move, but I don't mind the neckline of it and I don't really mind the color.
It's
But
like a black top with
it's like
green, like
weird,
ruffy sleeves.
yeah, weird silky on the bottom. But bridesmaids' dresses are notoriously bad.
Your bridesmaids
The thing is,
dresses
she's
at
the
our
only
wedding were,
bridesmaid.
your bridesmaids dresses at our wedding were delightful.
Thank you. I made them myself. So.
Well, there you go.
Did you guys notice that at the wedding itself there were no other bridesmaids and no more ushers? It was
Yeah.
just the two of them.
Yep.
So it wasn't as if they had a color coordination of all the bridesmaids or anything like that. So it was just Sally, wear whatever you want. We want green. Wear green.
Yeah.
Could be. Don't know. Now, I didn't mention this last week. It just didn't come up in the conversation. But do you know where this wedding is taking place? Did you
No.
guys
No.
check that out? Okay, so there is a building known as the Puck Building, which is in Manhattan. It's a historic building, and it's on the block of Lafayette, Houston, Mulberry, and Jersey Streets. It's like right there around that area. And it was actually designed back in 1885. So it's something that's it's been around for a very long time. They did remodeling in the early 80s, and then they did more remodeling in the 90s. But one of the things that is very prominent in this building is that there are sculptures of Shakespeare's character Puck
Oh,
from A
cool.
Midsummer Night's Dream. And hence the name of the Puck Building.
That's an oddly specific choice for a location, because if you watch this whole scene, honestly, they could have shot this on a soundstage in wherever they're filming this movie. Like, there are very few actual identifiable building references.
Correct, but that I got from the commentary.
No, I know. I'm just saying, like,
The commentary mentions a lot of, I mean, Rob Reiner chose many different real locations to film a lot of these scenes. So that it would be identifiable to people who, are in Manhattan and
Right.
stuff like that.
Yeah. I kind of have at this point this kind of love-hate relationship with movies set in New York City because I think, there's a lot of iconic architecture and places that people want to be and this kind of like feeling of the vibrancy of the city. And, there's just been so much of it that at some point, like, it feels very refreshing to have cinema and TV shows set elsewhere. And like I was thinking about my movie picks when we get to talking about them, and like You've Got Mail, that's set in New York City, and it's the same kind of thing. It's like we're looking at these great city areas where people are living these vibrant lives, and
Once again, Nora Ephron.
and I'm kind of like,
Apparently, she likes to do that.
yeah, and it's great, but also I feel like I'm kind of ready for something else, you know?
Okay, I understand that. I can hear what you're saying with that. So there's also the building was the another reason it was named the Puck Building at the beginning was that there was a magazine in the 1800s that was known as Puck Magazine, and it was the home of the production of that magazine. And then in the 1980s, they started publishing the magazine Spy Magazine, which, hint, hint for everybody, it might come up a little bit later this week. Hmm. So Spy Magazine is also connected to this building. So I thought that was very interesting.
Cool.
And in the ballroom, you can have – there's two ballrooms there. There's the Skylight Ballroom, which can accommodate up to 250 guests. And then you have the Grand Ballroom, which can fit up to 1,000. My guess is they're using the smaller one here.
Yeah, this looks like what a, you guys think? Skylight Ballroom.
Probably. Yeah. All right, so do either of you have anything else to say about this minute before we get into the script?
Not this minute. I mean, we're going to finish this argument tomorrow, so maybe we'll okay. I'll save the rest of my comments about this conversation until then.
Okay. All right. Marcy, you have anything you want to say?
No, thanks.
Okay. So one of the things that I love about the script is it's very descriptive of all the scenes. You know, Nora Ephron really knows how to set the scene in the script. So you know, they finish their conversation about the dog. And then when Sally says, I'm the dog, it says people are starting to notice the intensity of the conversation. Sally is really furious now. She starts towards a large screen that's a few feet from the end of the room, thinking they can get some privacy if she gets behind it. So in the script, you know, she really tries to find a place to hide, to have this conversation. And then Sally's response is a little different to Harry than in the movie. She says, I don't see that, Harry. If anyone's a dog, you're the dog. To you, this is something that just happened, and you think you can say, great, it happened. Now let's get on with it. We'll go back to the way it was. Like, what happened didn't mean anything. And then it says, they reach the screen, but there's no getting behind it. There are folded chairs and the bass player's bass case and the drummer's drum suitcase, etc. Sally reverses and starts towards a door out of the room. Harry follows. And then their conversation continues, and Sally says, the worst mistake I ever made. And then it says, they go through the door Sally was heading for, and now they're in the kitchen. Waiters are banging by with trays, dumping glasses into the sink, opening champagne, etc. Harry and Sally shouting now over the din. And then Harry says, it's always the same. It's always the same. The minute you make love with somebody, the expectations start. And then Sally says, first of all, I'm not someone. Second of all, I don't expect anything from you, okay? Bullshit. You expect me to know how to behave with you now. You don't have to behave anyway with me now, okay? And then Harry has the fine, fine. And then the rest of the dialogue in the minute stays the same. So I actually like the extended dialogue. I think it gives a little more information about what they're both thinking. I mean, I like the way they do it in the movie also, but you know, they give us some extra dialogue here, which helps set the scene for what's about to come up even greater. So I like that.
So Rob, two things. One, Marcy, Rob is just I'm excited about the fact that you're reading to us from the script. Marcy, you remember our salad days of reading from the Roadhouse script?
Mm-hmm.
And what did we think about those additions to the script?
Some of them were just bad, weren't they?
Yeah. So, Rob, I'm going to push back a little bit. I actually think that the way that what ended up on the screen is a punchier version of the dialogue. And like we found out in Roadhouse, most of the time when they cut stuff out of the shooting script, it gives the action a little bit more velocity. And I think that's the case here.
Yeah. Okay. No, I agree with you on that. It's not as if I'm saying that the script is perfect. Obviously it's not. There's a lot of ad libs. Things are changed, you know, in the final cut, and I like it. But I just like the way that this, you know, I think that in the movie, the conversation goes a little too quickly and that they could have added a little more bluster to it.
Disagree. I feel like the best thing about this conversation, it's like a prize fight or a tennis match, in the sense that it's like shot, shot, shot. Like if I were watching this conversation, my head would just be sort of like ping ponging back and forth between the two of them. And I think that's what makes it so great.
Okay. All right. That's fair. That's definitely fair. So every Monday we have a segment called Meg Ryan Monday, where my guests will give their top five Meg Ryan performances. So because you're both here, I figured I'll do it a little fun way. So we'll do it in a snake fashion. You guys can choose who starts, but one of you will start at number five, and then the other one go to number five, and then their four, and then move to the other one,
That
and their
sounds
four,
great.
three, back and forth. So
All right.
you guys can decide who starts it off
Well,
at number five.
ladies first, Marcy. I think you should go first.
Okay. I would say before we get started, I have not seen a lot of Meg Ryan's movies, especially things that are more recent to now. So I'm
You're not
probably
missing anything.
I pulled out.
Oh, that is a shot, Rob.
I had to
Come
pull
on.
out from some of my back catalog here.
Wow.
My number five is Sleepless in Seattle.
Marcy, you want to add anything more about that?
Well, I would say just a little something for everybody to know about. Like, just as I was saying, I'm kind of over New York City as being the backdrop for a lot of movies. I'm also really over rom-coms, and I don't like them very much anymore at all.
I thought you were going to say you're over Seattle being a being.
I thought
being
you were
going to
say you're over Tom Hanks.
No, I wouldn't. No, I just saw A Man Called Otto, and I thought he was fantastic in that. I still like him quite a bit, but
well,
I am
Marcy,
a little bit over rom-coms. So,
Marcy, guess what? My number five is also Sleepless in Seattle.
What? All
I know.
Right.
So
wow.
I think you have sort of hit that. I would say I've got three Meg Ryan rom-coms on my list, and this is by far the least of the three.
Okay.
So, what's your number four?
Number four, Courage Under Fire, 1996 with Denzel Washington, and she is being investigated for a Medal of Honor.
Rob, I swear to God, we did not do this ahead of time. That's my number four.
Stop it.
I know it's true. So let me add a little bit more to that. So I think Meg Ryan is an underrated dramatic actor. And I think the first movie where she sort of got a chance to really not be America's sweetheart was this movie. Courage Under Fire is amazing. I strongly recommend it to all of you. It's got an amazing,
I'm a
very
big fan of it
early
also.
Performance. This is one of Matt Damon's earliest on-screen performances, and he is amazing. This movie is great. Like, and Meg Ryan in Courage Under Fire is a badass.
Yeah. It also has one of my favorite types of movies or storytelling where you have the same scene or incident spoken of by many different perspectives. I really
100%.
Yeah, like a Rashomon type of thing.
Yeah.
Marcy,
really
I
cool.
Wouldn't it be funny if we match? I don't think that's going to be the case. What's your
I
number
doubt
three?
It. Proof of Life 2000 with Russell Crowe fighting. World trying to find her husband who's been lost in the jungle.
Well, see,
kidnapped.
You've rated that movie a little too low. It's going to come up on my list as well.
Yeah.
So I'll tell you what.
Why am I not surprised about that, Roger?
We'll talk more about that when we get there. My number three is You've Got Mail.
Okay.
Which I think is, I think it's delightful. She and Tom Hanks. It's definitely the better Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks of all the movie. There's three movies with Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks. You've Got Mail is by far the best one.
Okay. And
all right, that's fair.
Yeah. What was the third? Because we got Sleepless in Seattle. And
The third is Joe versus the Volcano. Joe versus the Volcano.
Joe versus the Volcano.
Yeah,
oh,
I've never
the less
really
said about
seen that,
the better.
Movie.
What's
my
your number two?
Number two is Top Gun, where she plays Goose's wife.
You think that, all right, that's your second best Meg Ryan performance?
Well, I kind of bled it into I like that movie a lot. But like I said when I began, I have not seen a lot of Meg Ryan films. So you're looking at the five that I've seen, and I might have ranked it higher because I like the movie better.
She's good in that movie, and I believe that is her on-screen debut. And the couple
no,
of
she
scenes.
Was in something else. She was in something else before, but
well,
it's
but yeah, very
it's,
early.
It's the first one where she stood out.
And certainly the scene that she has after Goose dies is pretty great.
Yeah.
All right. Well, my second favorite movie is Proof of Life. And I don't think I need to say more. Everybody knows that that is an amazing movie, but if you need proof of it, you should go listen.
You can
to
go listen to
my episode
to
of
Roger
Lamb
talking
Cast.
About it on the Lambcast.
That's right, where I engineered a massive campaign to get it immortalized in the way that it should.
Awesome. My number one is You've Got Mail, 1998. So fantastic use of internet. Also, like, kind of the takeover of big box stores to little industry, which is really tragic. So many small meet cutes in little neighborhoods in New York City. I mean, they really play up New York City in a really nice way, as opposed to Ghost, which makes New York City look like a hellhole. if you ever wanted to fall in love with New York, you could watch You Got Mail and you really would. They just have meet cute after meet cute in that movie. And she plays it really lovely. And it's always been one of my favorites.
Marcy,
did you know that the idea of You've Got Mail came from this movie?
Oh, no, that's fun.
Because when Harry and Sally meet each other in the bookstore, which is Shakespeare and Co. So that's a bookstore or that particular location was closed down, and Nora Ephron got really upset about that because it was taken over by like Borders or some big chain. Therefore it gave her the idea to modernize Shop Around the Corner and use that same idea for You've Got Mail.
I did not know that, but Marcy, it's refreshing to hear you become a populist and advocate for small business. How much money have we spent on Amazon orders this year?
Shush.
All right.
Well, we live in the middle of nowhere. It takes us over an hour to get anywhere.
That's true. That's true. We do. Well,
but you choose to live there.
We do.
So there's a reason that apparently you guys like living there, which is good.
Well, we love the school where we work.
There you go.
Well, my number one, Marcy, I don't know if you just sort of mentally disqualified this because it didn't seem appropriate, is the movie that we're talking about. I think it's by far Meg Ryan's best performance. And I don't think there's any other. I think that's number one, and everything else is competing for like the four spot.
Well, you've also seen When Harry Met Sally a million more times than I've seen it.
How many times have you seen it?
Twice and a half.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I'm pretty sure. I watched a half today, kind of on double speed, so I could refresh my memory.
I feel confident in saying that this is Meg Ryan's best performance in terms of sort of emotional range and getting to express all the different things that made us fall in love with her as an actor.
Yeah, she's great.
All right. Excellent. Thank you both for those lists. It was very refreshing to hear them.
Is there anything different in there than your other guests?
Is there anything different?
Did we have any?
Every one of those movies, every one of those movies has been on someone else's list.
Yeah.
You know,
I would expect so.
You know, I mean, there are some of them were rated higher and other people, some of them were rated lower. You know, that's the way these things work. I mean, Roger, one of the things you mentioned before was that you thought that Courage Under Fire was her first big dramatic role. But her first big dramatic role was actually When a Man Loves a Woman.
That's fair.
Which she was even nominated for an Oscar for that movie.
So, I guess I misspoke. That's the first, like, action movie I could ever remember her being in.
Okay, there you go. I think it's the only action movie that she's been in also.
Oh, it's Proof of Life, although she isn't doing action-y type things in Proof of Life.
Yeah, well, if you want to talk about that way, so you can say Top Gun is also an action movie.
That's fair. You have tangled me up in my twisted web of words, Rob. I appreciate that.
All right. So you guys want to tell people where they can find Roger and Marcy?
Sure. I'd be happy to do that. Most of you perhaps would, if you like podcasts like this, I would strongly go out and try Roadhouse Minute. You can join our dozen of listeners and enjoy as we go through.
I'm sure you have more than dozens. Come on.
The best bad movie of all time, a Patrick Swayze classic. It's fantastic. And get it where all good podcasts can be found.
All right, great. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for a Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter, or you can go directly to my website, movieroundminute.com. So until tomorrow, I'll have what she's having.
I'll have what she's having.
I'll have what she's having.
Gave me a thrill with all your faults. I love you still. It had to be you. Wonderful you. Had to be you.